This podcast is brought to you by the new October term at fxphd.com. Once again, we've tried to make a special effort to deliver on the requests of our members, offering new courses in Nuke Studio, Golem Crowds, V-Ray version 3, and even special access to the upcoming learning editions of Flare and Flame Assist on OS X. Check it all out at fxphd.com. Hi, and welcome to this week's VFX Show. I'm Mike Seymour, and this week we are doing something we've not ever done before. We are not going to do the visual effects of a film. We're going to do the visual effects of a game. In fact, Destiny. We are going on console and trying to level up, and I'm joined on the line by one regular, which is Matt. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing really good. Happy to be here. Excited to talk about some games that I've been playing quite a bit of lately.
And a new member of our panel of experts, Andrew Usher. How are you, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm doing very, very well. Glad to be here. Looking forward to it.
So, Andrew, most people, regulars on the show, would know Matt extremely well. He's been a loyal panelist for a long time. But can I just get you to introduce your background a little? And, in fact, you even have a website devoted to gaming.
Yeah, that's right. Well, my background originally was computer science. I did computer science in Glasgow University and then moved into doing corporate media production in Scotland. I own my own Red Epic Dragon for my sins. And I guess as a child of the 70s, gaming is in my bloodstream. So I've kind of been a long-time gamer, and about 8 years ago, I took over a gaming site, and the rest was kind of history. So I think I own everything.
Well, now, I'm going to confess that I'm probably third in the ranking of gamers on this podcast. So I've been playing it kind of with my daughter. I used to not be... I wouldn't identify myself as a gamer, but I've been attracted by the quality of the visual effects work in these things. And so you guys should feel free to correct me. You listeners should feel free to email me when I screw up because... Well, I think I have an opinion on the quality of the visuals and how they went about them. I certainly don't have the kind of background that I think you guys probably have in experience. But let's start out with a review of the game as we would do with a film, and say that this was obviously coming from the company that did Halo. This was a hugely anticipated game across a whole range of things. Even at SIDGRAPH, there were multiple Destiny presentations. Matt, what did you think of it as a game, as a gameplay?
Well, I think it's got a lot of different things going on, some really positive and some not negative, but some maybe not as positive as others. But I think overall, the design language and the overall aesthetic within the game, certainly the graphics and the sort of the kind of next generation style graphics, if you're playing on a PS4 or an Xbox One, I think are really pretty amazing. I think the campaign story within the game, at least what's currently been released, as there's been no DLC packages released for the game yet, I think is probably one of the things that I would say is sort of a shortcoming. I think the story elements are, interesting. I like the voice acting. I think they got some great voice actors to do some of the recordings for the game, including Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
As the ghost. Yeah. who I think is great, and then some other great voices as well. But I thought overall the narrative had some, it didn't totally make sense to me. There were a lot of things about it that maybe I just didn't get. I watched the whole thing, but it was a bit cryptic, a bit confusing. But I think that, in the end, the gameplay itself more than makes up for that. I thought the gameplay was really excellent, and the multiplayer, the online multiplayer components, and the social aspects of the game, I think really for me bring it into kind of another arena that makes it just really a lot of fun.
And Andrew, what about you?
Yeah, I kind of agree. I'm kind of torn on it. It feels to me a little bit like the unwanted love child of Borderlands meets Halo. It feels kind of a game torn between two dimensions. Aesthetically, I think it's very, very nice. I think graphically it's pretty superb. There's some really good work in there. Story-wise, I agree. I think the campaign is confused the best. I just kind of gave up with the campaign, if I'm honest, and ended up doing strike missions. And overall, I was left just really wondering where they were trying to take it. I didn't think it was as clear a story as maybe Borderlands or Halo. It shared a lot of very similar components. But I just feel it's missing something. Although, having said that, I have actually played through it twice, so it's obviously not missing that much to engage me. But it's definitely primed for DLC, I think. I think that's how it'll pan out. It'll be just another DLC heavy game.
So I guess let me just place it in the pantheon of games that are sort of pretty cool at the moment. Certainly from my point of view, there's two aspects to this. Firstly, there's the difference between going between the previous generation and the current generation. And I'm a PS4 guy. I think, Matt, you are Xbox?
Yeah, I've got Xbox One and an old 360 here.
Right. And Andrew?
I have everything other than the Xbox One. I kind of refuse to purchase it. it's a long story. So, yeah, I played it on the PS3 and the PS4.
Okay, so on the PS4, it seems to me that when I was playing it initially, I was attracted to Second Son because in the early stages, it felt like, well, there was more interesting stories going on in Second Son, and it was just, you know, a bit like we just had another go out and shoot another bunch of guys up kind of thing. But then as time progressed, it swung back the other way in that Second Son on PS4, while having a brilliant you know, a set of graphics and a really interesting story, just seemed to take a long time to get anywhere and to level up, whereas Destiny kind of then picked up steam once I kind of got more into it, unlocked more worlds and did more stuff at the tower. And it's just the sheer scale of the environments compared to, say, Halo, which was obviously on the previous generation for me. There's just more ability to carry more weapons, more ability to just cruise around and look at more interesting things. And I was like incredibly impressed by that. But I would say that there are some other games that need to be considered in that, like Last of Us, which again seems to be like a really amazing piece of storytelling. But it's just at some level you I guess it's like if you went and saw a Michael Bay film, you'd expect big action sequences. Like the guys that made you Halo, you'd expect to shoot up a bunch of stuff, right? I mean, that's got to be kind of what you expect. But compared to something like Assassin's Creed Black Flag, which to me just feels like a rushed title, I was really, really pleased with Destiny. I thought it was great. I am not actually finished it. That's how bad I am at playing this. So I confess that. But I am a warlock. What about you guys? What characters did you assume?
Yeah, I went
Titan.
Wow. Oh, Titan, yeah. Yeah, I went with Warlock, and my son went for, I guess, Hunter, and then he's actually replaying it now as a Titan.
So there is, I think you guys would agree, an astonishing amount of assets in this, if we start switching now to an analysis of the visuals. But a huge download when you first buy the darn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, how did you find it in terms, is it a reasonable download? Did you, and once you've over that initial hump, are you okay with this kind of necessity to be online for so much of it?
Yeah, you know, that's something that really doesn't bother me. I think it would bother me if I was maybe living in a different area, but I moved to Richmond, Virginia last year from a more rural environment where I had been living not too far from here. But when I moved here, I got a setup here that it's called Verizon Fios, which is it's probably one of the best internet service providers in terms of speed in the United States. And so it was just in the house that we bought. And so I hooked that up and signed up with them. And I've been really, really pleased with the performance in terms of speed. And so the download size of the game for me, in terms of those sort of mechanical components, was really irrelevant. And the online part of it, I've had it crash on me a few times where I got booted and it said, you know, I lost connection to the Destiny servers or something like that. But for the most part, it's been pretty consistent. And, you know, the online elements, the social component, you know, doing a fire team or something with a couple friends and being able to chat online while you're playing, it's been really, really successful. And I think it's been great. The one thing I would say, while I do think that the game itself is really large and the visuals are really great, I actually kind of feel like in some ways, some of the worlds, like if you go to one, like if you go to the moon, let's say, and you're just going to go patrol the moon and you just do whatever patrol missions are there. I actually kind of feel like the worlds feel kind of small in a way. They don't actually feel that large after a while. And I think maybe coming to it from a game like, an older game now, but the games like Red Dead Redemption or something where, you know, the world itself, and your ability to sort of free roam, is much larger. I felt like in Destiny, while the details were great and some of the worlds are, you know, a decent size, they still feel small. And I do feel like you're always sort of, you know, controlled in terms of how far you can go. The sense of free roaming, you know, I do feel like there's a sense of confinement that I feel sometimes in playing it.
What about you, Andrew?
Well, I'm in rural Scotland, so we don't really have particularly great broadband, but I kind of found it relatively manageable. I've not had a huge amount of problems other than the usual first day release, where there's a few issues with the server. But overall, I think from the download element, it's been pretty successful and it's been pretty stable, all in all. It's interesting what Matt's saying, because I kind of feel the same to do with the size of the game. Hmm. I think it's very linear. I think when you first play it and you're looking at the aesthetics and you're looking out at, like, you know, at Mars or the moon, it looks very nice. But I think as you play through the patrol missions and the strikes, it's very repetitive over time. So you're always really confined to the same elements. And I kind of found after time I started to pixel peep and really look at things more, because there's only so many times you can really do the summoning pits before it becomes the pits. So it does become very repetitive. But, and I felt the tower was too large for the amount of interaction you can really have in that one area. You know, like if you're running to the speaker and you're coming back, it seems quite a long distance to travel for not really much benefit or gain. So I kind of felt the same, really. I thought aesthetically it looks amazing. Texture detail's really great in places. But I just felt it was very confined. It wasn't truly a free roam experience that I thought it would have been.
So, I mean, let's talk about the social aspects. I mean, for example, Andrew, you're Scottish. Did you get a soccer game going in the tower?
We did try that, but like the Scottish football team, it wasn't very successful. So it was a bit disappointing.
We got six or seven people playing soccer in our tower one day.
But you have the sunshine. We have the dismal weather. I actually feel the social side of it is probably one of the weakest elements. I think that when you're doing strike missions where you're kind of fire team and it's okay, but I think when you're in the tower, there's not a lot of interaction really that takes place other than freestyle dancing that everybody seems to be doing.
Matt, how long till you discovered the freestyle dancing?
Oh, that was almost instantaneous.
Really? my daughter was playing, and somebody who wasn't on a fire team came up and helped her out and then bowed to her. She was quite chuffed, really. Then we went back to the tower and played soccer. It was seemed like a pretty good thing, really. You know, you wave to people and occasionally they'll wave back, and that's kind of interesting.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying, Andrew, about the, you know, certainly about the size of the tower environment and the length of time it takes to get from place to place. But I guess the thing I keep thinking with regards to the social component is, you know, there's all those areas where you can go to, like up by the, I can't remember the name of the character, but the ship master or whatever, where you can kind of go up in that one area. And there's like, there's sort of an upstairs, like lounge area where there's some chairs and things like that. And I think that, you know, some of that kind of social interaction beyond just the strike missions would be really fun if you had, like a large list of, like gamer friends, you know, that you could sort of get online with. Yeah. And I don't really have like a huge friends list, because, you know, my cohort is my 10-year-old son. And so we kind of keep, you know, our gamer tag, you know, sort of private or whatever, but because we just share one ID. But I think those kind of components, you know, if you had that going on, like it could be a place where you could just go and hang out, you know, and sit around in the tower with your avatar and chat, like kind of, it made me think a little bit almost of, and I shudder to say this, but like the Second Life kind of environments, or maybe a cooler example maybe would be like the Minecraft online experiences that people have. Yeah. I know a lot of young people, my son's age anyway, do that, and they go online and play together. So I think that opportunity is there. It's just one that, at least personally, I haven't really spent much time engaging in for those reasons.
Did you guys see the Digital Domain live action trailer that they launched?
Yes.
With
us?
So yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. Nice little bit of retro music in there.
And wasn't that Joseph Kosinski directed that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
really cool work.
Yeah, and the same effects company, of course, that did his live-action film. Though, no Rob Cruise. Oblivion was spectacular and gorgeous and stuff, but I wasn't going to go there on that. I was more than going to go there on the fact that that trailer I thought was really, really good. Did that adequately represent the game? It seemed to me that it was a remarkably kind of fun way to engage audiences, like do a live action version of the game. It's not an original idea, of course, but it was a good version of that idea. What do you think?
I mean, I think so. I love those kind of sort of teaser, kind of fun social commercials. I like the ones that they do with some of the sort of, you know, popular comedian actors for some of the Call of Duty type games and stuff. I think those are always really fun, and they did a great one for was it Halo Reach? They did a really pretty awesome live action trailer that's similar in a way, but it was almost more dramatic, you know, and it kind of played up the sort of the tragedy of the Halo Reach narrative. But I love that kind of stuff. I think it's so much fun. And I think, you know, if anything, you know, it's the shape of things to come. I think, you know, every year we see, especially with sort of the next gen consoles and this kind of conversation about some of this kind of next gen games with regards to the graphics and the effects and the animation and the, you know, the sort of the lighting effects and real-time things that they're able to accomplish in-game. I think, you know, the teasers of the commercials that are, of course, photoreal and all, you know, live action for the most part, you know, that's what games, I keep thinking that's what they're going to look like. You know, that's the next gen. And I love seeing stuff like that. To me, they're fun. You know, they usually have a sort of a sense of humor about them in most cases. And yeah, I thought it really kind of sold the idea that character does the, what do you call that in Destiny, where you can sort of warp from one location to another and drops the grenades under the ogre or whatever that character is. And I thought it was really fun.
Okay, so let's just talk about the effects, as it were, for a second. So there are two things I want to discuss, the environment, and then I'll move on to the faces. But in the environment work, like the use of particles, atmospherics, just stuff like that, and the lack of flickering as things kind of move in and behind and in front of such things, totally stops me from being taken out of the game. Like, generally speaking, I think they're breathtakingly pretty pictures. You kind of mentioned it before, but we were talking about it in terms of gameplay and it could be distracting. But if we leave the gameplay aside, Andrew, like, I mean, this is looking pretty good. Compared to PS3, like, how much of a difference do you notice?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think, you know, when you think back to the PS3, I think the move from the PS2 to the PS3, the whole element of HD and just the higher resolution made such quite a striking impact. I think that's what defined that generation. I think we're going to see this now with the PS4 and the Xbox One as time goes on. I think you're going to see full use of the hardware, and I think that's going to be a great experience overall, because I was really impressed with the particle sims. I thought they looked fantastic. I just thought some of the graphics were really top-notch. I think you're right. I never once seen any screen tearing, or there was nothing that was too glitchy. I felt immersed in the game. I didn't feel I was being distracted too much. Like the Hydras, I thought looked really, really cool. The kind of force shield around it, I thought it was really good. Overall, I was really well impressed with the visuals on it. I was probably more impressed than what I was expecting, if I was honest, because I did think it was going to be very typical Bungie and kind of Halo. And I think the animation, the characters and everything was absolutely really, really fantastic. So I was thoroughly, thoroughly impressed by it.
Matt, what's your impression of these graphics on a scale of, because it's obviously fairly early in a PS4 or next gen, in your case, Xbox thing. Do we feel like this is the level that we should expect, or do we feel like they've really done something exceptional here? Is this set a bar that we would expect on every sort of major product in the next, because this is obviously going to be now at a level, we've leveled up to PS4 or the new Xbox One. So do we feel like this is representative of that level, or do we feel like, wow, they're going to get so much more out of it over the next year or two?
I would actually say the latter. I mean, I know that, you know, some of the specs, you know, obviously when they're working on the build of this game before the release of the sort of this new gen hardware, these games obviously were in production several years prior to the release. And so they kind of have, you know, a glimpse of the roadmap and what the specs are going to be on the final release hardware. But I think until you actually have the hardware in hand and it's actually been released and, you know, you have the opportunity to kind of see how it plays on the box itself, I think, you know, this is, I'm hoping it's similar to sort of the previous generation pathway where, you know, sort of the first set of games, it looked great and we're sort of definitely a step ahead. And I think this game looks amazing and is a big step forward. But I would imagine that, you know, another year or two down the road, as some of the titles that, you know, maybe are just in the sort of beginning stages today, start to really take advantage of all the possibilities. And, you know, workflows are established, different kinds of cheats, and sort of, you know, techniques are sort of fostered and developed to really amortize and take advantage of what's in each box. I think we're going to see, a continued improvement as we have just in the previous generation console. So I think, you know, to me, this is just the beginning. I think it looks stunning and it's great, but I think it's only going to get better.
So Andrew, my question to you is, obviously in the world of these two big consoles, and they're the only ones I'm really considering in this discussion, though obviously there are other options just for direct PC and stuff. But just in this next gen package, over on Xbox One, which let's face it, like was announced like what, May 2013, you've got Rise Son of Rome, and I've been talking about Second Son, which is obviously exclusive PS4. Those packages get to take advantage of the hardware in fairly unique ways. I mean, in Second Son, you know, I have the, when his phone rings, it actually rings on my like controller. My console is very much, you know, being fully taken advantage of because they're targeting only one box. Presumably, Matt, you've seen similar things on Xbox One with things like Rise Son of Rome. So how much, Andrew, do you think Destiny is as good as we, you know, could sort of expect, and how much is it crippled by the fact that it's servicing or serving two masters?
I think that's always a problem. In this case, I can't really compare the Xbox One, but from what I've seen from the PlayStation 3 to the PlayStation 4, they're very, very similar. I don't think Destiny really takes advantage of the DualShock controller and the touchpad nearly as much as it could. So I think this is a problem with cross-platform games. I think you don't get the software really enhanced the hardware of the machine specifically.
And even in graphics, like in Second Son, the particle stuff, for the obviously, you know, the inherent nature of that game is spectacular. I mean,
yeah, it's stunning.
It's it doesn't, it feels to me like Destiny sits, okay, it's not going to take advantage of the controllers the way that you could if you were individually customized. But it didn't feel like it was, in a graphic sense, inferior to any other particular PS4 game that I've like looked at. I mean, we have Child of Light, which I haven't been playing, but my daughter has, and my other daughter, and she played it like to death, like literally jumped on it and didn't get to get off for a day and a half until she was finished it. And it was a gorgeous piece of footage, but it was not particularly characteristic of what you tend to see. There's a new FIFA game that I've just got for the PS4, which is kind of like a kickboxing thing, which I haven't really looked at yet, but apparently has really, really good faces. Matt, did you play Rise?
No, you know, I didn't play Rise, but the other games that I've been playing on Xbox One that I think, you know, Battlefield 4, Watch Dogs was a big next gen release title that I think is actually pretty interesting.
Very interesting.
Titanfall was another a big one that was the guys who I think did the initial Call of Duty, right, and left and did that. And then just the other day we downloaded the new Forza Horizon 2 game and started looking at that, which is a racing sim. And I think, you know, you really see, I always feel like you see something so interesting with regards to the capabilities of these things when you play a photorealistic racing game, if for no other reason than I think there's something about reflections and on the surface of the objects, and something that maybe is so familiar about it to us visually as well, and the environments and something. I just feel like there's always something in a racing game where you can kind of see, you know, how close to reality are we getting? I'm not really sure exactly what it is, but maybe just the familiarity with, being somebody who's ridden in a car, you know, for many, many hours of life, you know, you kind of know what you're expecting something to look like. And when they start playing around with, different weather conditions in the road, and you can be inside the cockpit of the vehicle or just outside or even a third person view, I think you get to see some really interesting things happen. And I thought the Forza Horizon game, you know, again, in terms of the simulations and the sort of the effects animation that's happening, the sim stuff, you know, in terms of water kicking up off the road and dirt. I feel like there's some really interesting and exciting things happening in that, but also in Watch Dogs too. I think Watch Dogs was one that really endeavored to take advantage of a lot of the things that the next gen hardware was going to be capable of doing. And I think, you know, it comes so close to really creating a unique and exciting kind of experience. And I think, you know, the world is much bigger than in Destiny. The story, I think, is, you know, corny, but in a weird way, better. In some ways, it feels more thought out. So, yeah, I don't know. I think there's I still feel like I still feel like we haven't seen the possibilities maximized in total for either of these, the sort of the next gen consoles.
There's a funny thing. We did a story on Watch Dogs, and one of the guys who was the art director, he was talking to me, and he said that, you go around and you can sort of find out information about people. And there was some guy he was about to kill, and he checked him out, and it came up with something like, that he was newly engaged as a kind of like background on him. And it was like, it suddenly went from being just a henchman that you killed to, oh, he's a guy that's just got engaged. And it was like, oh, well, now I'm kind of slightly torn because,
I don't know if I want to kill him now.
Yeah, poor chap. You know, he's going to leave a widow whatever. And it was just, I think there are some really interesting aspects on Watch Dogs. But you also mentioned motor racing, and I think, Andrew, mm-hmm. you did something about The Crew, right, which has been delayed recently, but did you not post something about it on your website?
Yeah, there's a couple of things coming out. The Crew is being delayed, but this week Drive Club comes out. I'm not sure if it's out already in America, but it's out this week, which I guess is the next definitive, apparently, racer for the PS4. I actually have it in pre-order. It looks very, very nice graphically. It's a bit like Matt saying it looks very photorealistic in elements. And I can always think that where you see the big difference is the water. When you look at the ocean,
yeah, totally.
The remastered GTA 5, that's where you really see the difference. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what Drive Club is going to be like. And that, I think, in a lot of ways will be a good indication of where the PS4 hardware can go and what we'll see in the next couple of years, because it's not long until the PS4 hits its first birthday. I think it's November the 21st or around about that time. So we're close to being 1 year in on next gen.
Yeah, so. But I do think it matters a lot. I mean, the first couple of titles, the ones especially that are sort of up-resed or redone, I think Last of Us being a good example of that. You don't expect them to fully capture Assassin's Creed Black Flag, when I already flagged. I don't think, it does justice to the platform. You sort of want to give it a bit of time before you... But surely a year is enough of an overlap between when they'd have been obviously developing it when it was in alpha through beta, through having some time to work with the finished console. We should be at the one-year mark seeing a pretty good representation, shouldn't we, Andrew?
I think so. I think it's a difficult one. I was thinking about this earlier on today, and I was looking back at the PS3, and I was looking at the releases that came out with that console and looking at how much more it advanced over the years. And it actually took quite a long time in the development cycle before we started seeing games like The Last of Us, Dark Souls, and games that were taking a lot more of the hardware on board. So I guess I'm not fussed that we're a year in and we haven't seen more, because I kind of think that I think the amount of money that's spent in games nowadays, the development cycle, I think there's a lot of companies just sit back and just see what the feedback really is, rather than pushing hard from the beginning.
But notion, though, that every time you change game console, like a full-on next-gen, you get the chance to kind of set a franchise for that level? In other words, you kind of, like, I mean, Halo really existed as the previous generation's kind of mega franchise. I mean, there were others, of course, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily translate that you're going to have, they're going to want it to, but thinking, you know, that Halo will be the franchise of this generation. It's like you get a chance to reestablish the franchise when you, because I mean, we change consoles. We literally change from Xbox to PS4. You get a lot of people that look around and really sort of break with what they've been doing. In the way you don't get with films, like you kind of, you know, you sort of establish. I don't know. It's a given that Assassin's Creed or whatever else is going to just jump easily to the next platform and be dominant. I don't know. What do you think?
I think, you know, I think Andrew kind of hit it on the head too earlier. And I think sort of what you're describing, Mike, is it's almost the difference between, at least in my mind, it seems like it's the difference between the marketing component of it and the sort of aggressive marketing. And I think you're right. The desire to have, like, you know, a hit title, at the outset that is franchise worthy in order to sort of have something that you, gamers would want to come back to. But I think that, I do think that, you know, the question as to whether or not a year in, you know, we're seeing the maximum total capabilities of either system in this case is I don't think we are. I think the lead time on all of these titles is so long. I mean, it's so much different than, I mean, similar in a lot of ways, but it's different in terms of the time and the money than a Hollywood property in terms of like a big visual effects film. Yeah, you know, I mean, sometimes you're looking at years and years worth of design and prep work and, you know, umpteen amounts of money going in. And like we were just talking about The Crew and a number of other titles, I think, that were delayed and pushed back because they're just not done. They're not ready yet. And, you know, part of it could be, too, that they're looking maybe at things that they can do to, you know, further optimize, further, you know, increase, you know, kill bugs and whatever else and increase the gameplay yield, but maybe even, you know, maximize the potential of the hardware to do even more. So I don't know. I feel like there's it's a bit of a different beast than maybe a film. And I think even you go and look at something like, look at Iron Man 1, right? Iron Man 1, you know, great visual effects and sets the tone, or even maybe a better example might be the first Jurassic Park, right? I mean, you know, it sets the tone, it sets a high bar, but you go back and look at those effects. I mean, they're still, for the most part, a lot of them are pretty good, but there's a few shots in there that aren't as good as, you know, if you were to do them today, right? But does it detract from an audience's desire to go back and see, you know, Jurassic Park 4 or whatever? I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. I think people still want to go see those things, right? So, well, I don't know. I feel like there's sort of two different things that you're asking.
I agree with you that people are going to get more and more out of the consoles right up until the second that they don't. It's just whether it's dramatic leaps. Like, I feel like you get the biggest step up in the first year. And yes, you're going to get more and more. But there is so much desire to have a strong franchise for the platform that, you know, you throw a lot of stuff at it. And also there are rewards for throwing stuff at it insofar as once you get these things, you know, you are talking about serious amounts of cash and you are global. I mean, there's no concept that this is kind of just a North American phenomenon. But, you know, you're right. The marketing of the games, which is why I brought up earlier the whole thing about digital domains live action piece, because I think the marketing of games is a really interesting concept in of its own. It seems to me that there's a assumption with some of the things like that Destiny live action trailer that gamers are quite media savvy, quite hip and quite quick to, you know, see through kind of lame marketing campaigns. It doesn't seem like most of the marketing to gamers is condescendingly kind of, you know, that's like a lot of cool visuals, a lot of cool stuff that's done, and obviously sometimes quite sophisticated. So remember that great Halo cinematic, or what it was, with the ad where that was like a giant miniature model. It was all frozen. Each character was kind of as if somebody had built a diorama kind of thing. Do you remember that one? And the camera just kind of moved around. I mean, that was a really sophisticated piece of stuff. I think it was done also by Digital Domain. But it, but then by the same token, it's there's such a community of gamers that if you come out with a game that's lame, doesn't matter how much great publicity you get getting people going there, they're going to rip you a new one in about no time flat. I think a lot of people go online and take, you know, serious concern of what's going on in terms of reviews and stuff on games. Andrew, do you think, I mean, was there any comparison here between how much gamers compare and care about reviews versus, say, film and film reviewers? Are film reviewers, like, less relevant or...?
No, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think one of the things that's very interesting of late is the amount of embargoes on reviews. I mean, a few years ago, you would have seen reviews maybe, you know, 3 weeks before a scheduled release. Now you're really not seeing that. And I think that's because companies are very switched on to marketing. And I think the marketing campaigns are much more sophisticated than they've ever been. I think they use social media much more. I think you're right. I think, you know, campaign adverts are really high quality. They get some superb visual effects and compositing. And I think there is a need for companies to make sure the game is going to be financially viable and it's going to regenerate enough money to kind of bring back development costs. So I think it shares a lot of parallels with film because I think there's a massive crossover now in the gaming community. I think years ago it was very niche. There was a lot of people who were 360 users, some were PS users. I think now because consoles are much more affordable and much more available, you see a bigger cross-section of the population gaming. If you look at a lot of the statistics, you see massive influx of women gaming, which you just didn't see 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's become much more accessible. And you just have to look at, you know, things like Infinity Blade on the iPad. You know, it's another really great game. It's got great visuals in it. It's had a fantastic marketing campaign. But the thing that does concern me a lot now is a lot of games do seem to have a lot of review embargoes, which I think for a lot of gamers that are online is quite frustrating because they want to have some solid facts because games are expensive now. That's the other thing. They have dramatically went up in price compared to 10, 13 years ago.
It's not cheap.
You know, one thing I just wanted to throw in there too that I also think is a really interesting component when you're talking about the marketing and the strategies for marketing. I agree about the embargoes. I think that's, you know, it's not unlike, you know, a movie that, you know, maybe didn't have a hot test screening. And so they, you know, maybe they don't allow it to be reviewed until the day it's released. But, you know, games do make the a lion's share of their income in those opening weekends. I mean, we read, you know, title news headlines every once in a while about a title garnering a huge amount of money in the opening weekend, more than, you know, last year's biggest blockbuster at the movies or something. And so it's kind of fascinating to read. But the other marketing thing that I think is so interesting is the use of, you talked about social media, but things like YouTube channels too. My son is sort of my, you know, he's my research demographic. And
literally my daughter knows vastly more than I do. Like,
oh yeah. And so does my son. He should actually be on the show instead of me.
I was thinking
tonight.
The same thing. My daughter should be here.
My
son, so he watches all these YouTube channels and like one of his favorites is the Yogscast, right? And so the Yogscast guys, like they do a lot of stuff with Minecraft, but they also play around with all these like sort of little indie titles and games, and they just go online and they kind of laugh and they play together and it's fun, you know. I mean, is it too really, you know, the the main co-host guys who do the Minecraft show, I think, are probably the most popular in our house. And just because they're so funny, you know, I mean, they tell a lot of great stories and they just have a good time. And so a lot of those kinds of sort of YouTube channel hosts have been approached by some of the marketing agencies for some of these big games, and they get early release betas of games, and they'll wind up playing the game, and you know, people go, and you know, millions of fans go and watch these different channels, and they're able to garner you know, that audience and sort of amortize that connection in a way to get people excited about a title. So I think that's another really interesting thing that you don't really see that as much with movies anymore, but it's something that seems to be a really big deal in games.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, let's swing back to Destiny just in terms of visuals, because I never got back to discussing the Queen of the Reef. I thought that was a really interesting thing. Not only that it's interesting, but you can't kind of go back to it while you're like, you go there, and then certainly for my case, it's no longer an option to go back again. But there's this particularly interesting rendering of the face of your character with your character kind of emoting stuff. Can you guys maybe start with you, Andrew? What did you think of that? Was it a waste of time? Was it really interesting just from a visuals point of view? How did you rate it?
For me, I was really interested in it. I think there's... I guess if you're interested in visual effects and compositing and all these type of subjects, games are a really interesting, you know, thing to study, because facial animation has come on leaps and bounds. It's just incredible. So I thought the cutscenes were really, really well done. I thought the, you know, the voice acting was fantastic. I thought the visuals were really, really, really good. The segment with the Queen and the Reef, I just felt very disjointed over it. I wasn't really too sure how it factored into the game, other than for a very brief moment. But I thought the cutscene was really, really great.
But surely it's your character in the cutscene, so it's not just like a pre-rendered cutscene. That's why I bring it up.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
But I think that, yeah, I know. But I think the thing about the game is there is only X amount of classes of character in the game. So I don't think there's a lot of diversity graphically between the characters in order to create something like that.
Well, and if you chose to be a robot, like, it's not that big a deal, which is what my character was, a robot. And so, you know, I'd be so curious to go back and see that scene replayed with a human.
Well, we have a, you know, a warlock that she's got a, you know, blue stripe across her face, but she's pretty much looks like a person. You know, we didn't go for Awoken Blue. And so, yeah, I mean, it was pretty interesting. Like, it was... See, I've always had, from way back, this huge problem with cutscenes, when you just... You're playing a game, you've got to stop and wait while they tell you a bit of story, and I always wanted to skip through it, or did skip through it, and then you got back into the game again. And so if you go way back in time to something like Command and Conquer, you know, and I'm talking like, you know, centuries, eons ago in the history of Dawn of Time, it would just be like two completely separate things going on. There'd be this video playing, and there'd be a game that was kind of fun where you were trying to, you know, build things and blow things up and attack things. And every once in a while, you'd have to stop what you were doing and just watch this stupid thing about something that had nothing to do with anything, and then it'd come back again. Now, obviously, we've moved on a long way since then, but if you're designing a character and then your design is what's interacting in a cutscene, that's a huge step up from my point of view.
Yeah, but if you look at even the old The Last Killzone that was on the PS3, and it had kind of a cutscene at the end with all the characters. I mean, granted, you didn't customize your character, but it did have individual cutscenes with characters' names and things. So I think a lot more games have that type of interaction in it, to kind of try to make you as a player a lot more immersed in the game. What I found interesting about Destiny was that you couldn't skip the cutscenes, which I thought was quite interesting. And I was wondering whether they were trying to indulge themselves and really make you feel much more committed and part of the overall process, or whether it was just a lot more self-indulgent on their part. But I see where you're coming from in the character, but I wasn't overwhelmed by that. I kind of feel in this generation of console, that should be pretty much a given, that whatever character you design, it should, that type of interaction and that ability to show it should really be there. I think we're I think that should be pretty standard now for this generation of console.
The rendering of faces in Rise, in Second Son, and in this is the number one thing I'm interested in. I mean, just as a personal flag, the number one thing that I care about beyond gameplay is how well they're rendering the faces. So I just say that right up front. But okay, that's interesting that you say that, because of course the level that you just described is some guy's weeping at his console, because if that's a standard thing, like getting really good animated faces that are customized, that have good subsurface scattering and that have incredibly high levels of detail and have the specular highlights right, so they don't just look either wax or rubber or stone. I mean, it's just and that's even before we get to issues of having them emote, is really hard.
Yeah, I know, but I think just in this generation, and I think I don't think it's a massive step up.
You don't think it's a technical step up, or you don't think it's a big ask to step up?
I don't know. I mean, when I look at it, I'm not overwhelmed by it. I can't care in a lot of ways when it gets to that cutscene. It looks nice. You can appreciate the amount of work and detail that's went into it. But I definitely think that this is the direction we're heading. I think a lot more detail and a lot more interaction. I'm not feeling the love for it as much as you are, Mike.
So Bungie listeners at the corporation, feel free to direct your attention at Andrew directly and not at me. Matt, sir, professor,
yes,
step in. What is your opinion?
No, I mean, I think it is. I think it is pretty exciting. I think the things that it makes me think of, though, like it makes me think of other possibilities. Like, I think it's great to see that kind of integration into the game and the ability to render those assets in real time. I think Andrew makes a good point, though, that it is a limited number of assets, which I suppose it would kind of have to be, right, to make it something that was even plausible or doable as a real-time render. And I think it's pretty successful. I would love to go back, actually, though, and see that scene with a human character, because I do think I was playing the part of, an exo, right, which is what they call the robots in the game world. And so it's not quite as dynamic, although my robot did look really cool, but he didn't have any subsurface scattering, because he's a sort of a plasticky, metallicy kind of robot looking character. But it made me think of something really interesting. One thing that, just as a side note, I would love to see the integration of some of that real time rendering technology and some of that, detailed sort of facial animation. I wonder if, I know you can build these sort of, custom things. You see people doing this at various universities and institutions, but, with the Xbox One that we have, it has the sort of second generation Kinect device, which, I think, has its sort of gimmicky component. But the second generation of that device is so interesting in terms of the kinds of data that it's capable of acquiring in real time from you in the environment, even so far as being able to read your pulse, at a distance across the room. Yes. The fidelity is really amazing. And it would be fascinating to see the development and building of some kind of social tool, or even just like a fun, goofy screwing around kind of tool that would allow you to have real-time facial capture and retargeting to pre-made puppets that could render in real time based on the movements that you're doing. I mean, these are all things that are certainly possible. I had my students today over at VCU. We have a new Vicon motion capture stage, and so we had students over there today, and we were doing motion capture, and every single it was only two classes, but both my classes, different students piped in and said, "How hard is it to do facial capture?" And I was like, "Not that hard, it's just a different setup. We'd have to break down the rig and do a different kind of setup." And so it's something that people are really interested in, and the ability to maybe do some of that stuff Certainly within the context of the game and Destiny, I think, you know, it's really well done. And I think it's really cool. It again is really immersive. Although I do think you should be able to skip the cutscenes, and it bugs me that you can't. But I think maybe there's even some additional opportunities for some aspiring game developers out there, or even some entrepreneurial, you know, visual effects artists to build something, you know, that you could sell. I want that tool.
There was in the Rainbow Six and the 360, did it not use the Kinect to do an attempt to try and scan your features and place it on your character? I'm pretty sure there was something like that.
I don't know.
It wasn't very successful.
There was something like that at SeaGraph, not this last year, but the year before, where they had a demo where they were doing like a Kinect sort of style scan.
They did it this year, and it was someone from ICT. And they,
is that what it was? Yeah, and then it was your real avatar in-game, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, I think we had a story about it, a podcast on FX Guide. How much do we care about the fact that you said that really good voicing before, you have a celebrity, like a hardcore fan favorite as the voice of your ghost, with huge cred in a related genre of kind of entertainment. Does that sell stuff, or is that like, would it matter if the ghost had been voiced by a voice actor that was not known?
I love it. I think it's awesome. I don't know. It sells it for me. I love it. And one of the voices is the guy from The Wire. Yeah, or Fringe. Yeah, the I can't remember the actor's name. But yeah, he's really good too.
Andrew?
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I just thought it was great. I really loved the voice acting. And I think it's that thing as well that you can kind of associate with the actor a little bit. So it makes it a bit more immersive. And I think I was much more thrilled from the actor that was in The Fringe than Peter Dinklage, to be honest, because I love Fringe. That's a great TV series. I thought it was really, really good. And I think this is something else that I think you'll see much, much more of in games. I think they're going to lever and kind of use that as leverage to bring more people into kind of more widespread games, I think, for sure.
So I guess I should have done this ages ago, because that would have really established where we're at. Favorite weapon? I'm guessing, Matt, you feel like a pulse rifle kind of guy to me.
I have the Stranger's rifle, which sounds like a... And then I also have the... what is it? I can't remember the name of it. It's like the Sengen E or something, I think.
Stranger's rifle is, in fact, a pulse rifle. I just completely guessed that. I didn't know that was what you were going to say. Andrew?
That's a good one, though.
I'm using a scout rifle, I'm using a sniper rifle, and I'm using a rocket launcher. And I seem to have...
Obviously want to use a rocket launcher.
Yeah. And I seem to have just used the same weapons through the whole game. When I checked yesterday, I realized that I hadn't really tried to customize any of the weapons. You know, you can kind of rank them up and add in like an extra kind of feature of impact damage, and I noticed yesterday I hadn't actually been bothered with that at all.
Oh, really? So we've been definitely worrying about that. Yeah.
No, it's I've just been sticking to the same weapons, I think, for the whole two run-throughs of the whole game.
Well, you more senior gamers than I can comment on what this says about us, but my daughter's favorite weapon is the hand cannon. I think it's, and she's lethal with it. And she's really good. But I like that style of play, I must admit. A bit more punch, a bit more accuracy, a bit less rapid fire.
I did complete the final level in the campaign with a hand cannon, I just have to say.
Okay.
Which is kind of psycho to do it that way. It just happened to be the case that I didn't know it was the end. And I got there and I just kept playing. And then I finally realized, oh, this must be the end because there's the... spoiler alert, the three statues that come to life. And I didn't know that I could go back out and switch my weapons.
just an FYI, like when I haven't finished the game, you can't say spoiler alert and then immediately give me the spoiler. But okay, thanks.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's right. It's a Zen thing. The journey is the reward. It's not all about getting to the end. It's not a whodunit mystery. Okay, Just a couple of other things I want to tick off because that's on my list. Obviously, when you're traveling and doing stuff, there's that shot of your craft, your spaceship, what do you want to call it, and the kind of light tunnel that you travel in and stuff. Do you find those, which are obviously masking game loads, are they acceptable? Do you care? Did you upgrade your ship much? Did you care?
I mean, I like stuff like that. I think, you know, I'm not super crazy about the ship design language personally, but, you know, whatever. Like, you know, it's not that they're interesting, and some I think are more interesting than others. But I mean, I think it's all right. I know what's going on in the background, right? That it's like an intensive moment of loading assets, as well as if it's a social component, you're connecting to this, that, and the other players, and they're sort of, you know, grouping you together. But I kind of dig it. I think it's kind of nice, and it sets a nice pace. And if you play with headphones on, which I like to do, I think it's even more sort of immersive. There's sometimes these kind of quiet moments in between the fracas that you can get involved in.
Andrew, there's obviously a lot more people hanging out on places like Venus than, say, Mars and stuff. Do you care when you're playing about other players, seeing them running around doing stuff? And I'm saying not in your fire team. I mean, just generally.
Yeah, I quite like seeing other players, because I think, I mean, I purchased this game on the basis that it was an MMO or, you know, massive multiplayer online experience, and I kind of really felt pretty let down by it, if I'm honest.
That's really interesting, because I purchased it much more like a first-person shooter, kind of, because of I just had that right in my head as a Halo thing. That's interesting. Okay, so yeah, you sort of approached it from a different point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I was never, and I'm probably going to get crucified for saying this, I was never a huge Halo lover. I liked a couple of the Halo games, but overall, I just felt it was very one-dimensional. I just couldn't get as excited as most other people. So I was kind of really looking at this more from the social element. I thought there'd have been bigger teams, and I thought there'd be a lot more interaction in the world. If you take a game, an old game now, like the racing game Test Drive, it was an MMO, and there was tons of other players online, and you could join in to races, and it worked really, really well when it worked. This feels very, although the levels are quite big, the worlds are quite big, there doesn't seem to be a lot of players at times.
Yeah,
but surely that's been controlled by the game, right? Because like, if you saw all the people that were playing at any one moment, you'd see 10 gazillion people in any. It's giving you a limited subset. I mean, if I'm on Venus and you're on Venus, I'm not going to see you unless it's put us in the same thing together, or if we were obviously on a fire team.
I think the most you see is roughly about 6 people, though. I think it's fairly locked off to quite a low value, which kind of surprised me.
Okay.
I think that
you look at games like...
Look at like something though, like Battlefield 4, which I play a ton of Battlefield 4. That's probably my all-time favorite game these days. But you look at a game like that where you've got the conquest large maps where you've got, I think it's 64 players, and so that's a massive multiplayer online experience as far as I'm concerned, in terms of that style of game. But I think one of the issues, though, is, you know, you go back and look at how many times Electronic Arts and you know, DICE or whatever, like how many times they sort of get hammered, you know, in the fan community for all of these sort of, you know, netcode issues and problems with, you know, the online support and server issues and stuff. And
well,
so I think
do we forget SimCity's mega disastrous rollout?
Sure. Well, I guess what I'm saying, though, is when we talk about the social component in a game like Destiny, the numbers are kept really low, and I wish it was bigger. But I wonder if maybe, you know, it just seems like that's a big to do, like to create, to have all those moving parts working in conjunction with one another. That must be something that I'm pretty ignorant of that kind of stuff, I will confess. But it seems like something that must be really difficult to achieve and have work successfully, given sort of the disparate nature of people's connection speeds, et cetera.
Well, let me ask you this then. In stuff that's coming that we kind of know about, And I don't mean, you know, anything that's out right now in the shops, but something that, that might come out in the next 6 months. Is what's got your attention? Like, is there anything that you're really looking forward to? That's we mentioned Drive Club, I think, already. But I guess I'll start with you, Matt. Like, you know, what's most likely to get you to wander down to the store if you actually go to a physical store and buy something?
I'm all downloads now. I hate the physical media because it always gets scratched for some reason in my house. But I'm really curious about the Division. I wonder if it can achieve the level of sort of immersive interactive gameplay that has been demoed at things like E3 and stuff. I'm interested in, you know, Battlefield Hardline just because I like that franchise. The Advanced Warfare stuff that I've been seeing looks really interesting. I'm not a big Call of Duty fan, but I'm certainly interested in checking that out. I think the thing I was actually most excited about actually has already been released, and it was the Xbox One version of Minecraft, which is, I think, for all intents and purposes, as weird as that sounds, like, that's probably one of my all-time favorite games.
Minecraft on a console. You're not tempted to do Minecraft on a PC, or?
Oh, I've got it on the Mac, and okay, I've got it on my phone, and I just love Minecraft. I love the whole concept and idea of Minecraft.
I was just involved in a conference here in Sydney called Disrupt Sydney, and as we had a range of really outstanding speakers, a sensational one, including Mark Sager, who is going to appear in FX PhD and does a run-through of his Baby X project, which is, I don't know if you've seen Baby X, but it is simply jaw-dropping. One of the speakers that we got in, which we were really proud of, was an 8-year-old girl to explain Minecraft and Minecraft's use in education to this room full of experts. And I got to tell you, Matt, it was humiliating how good she was in front of an audience. Like she's an 8-year-old showing videos and running her whole keynote from her iPad and saying things like... And so then I found this clip on the internet, and she'd play it. You know, you can find anything on the internet these days. Anyway, and she just was like, oh my God, I wasn't that accomplished until I was 29. I couldn't speak in front of a crowd like that. But anyway, I have a lot of respect for Minecraft, but I'm not player of Minecraft. What about you, Andrew?
My 9-year-old son loves Minecraft, and he writes plugins for it and has his own server, and it's all way above me. Gaming wise, it has to be Bloodborne from Software, the guys behind Demon's Souls and Dark Souls. I just think Demon's Souls was such a great game that I went out and bought the Japanese version. I bought the American release version, and then I bought the European version of the same game. And me and my friend just have a running joke that From Software means your child is abandoned for summer holidays as you sit in and play hundreds of hours of Demon's Souls. So their step up to the PS4 with Bloodborne looks really good. Graphically, it looks very immersive. It looks like it's got a lot of nice lighting. It's got some mist kind of simulations in it. It really looks great. And it's fairly old school in approach, so it's going to be tough as nails. And I just love Demon's Souls and Dark Souls. Just fantastic. So
I'll be looking up Assassin's Creed Unity in the hope that it lifts its technical game over Black Flag. But I've got to say, I'm a bit interested in what Naughty Dog does, and I think Uncharted 4 Thief's End will be interesting to look at. But again, that's partly because I'm just super interested in faces.
I think Uncharted is going to be fantastic. I think it's a shame that wasn't the release game for the PS4, because I think Naughty Dog do absolutely amazing work.
And they're a good company, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely sensational. And I think that's going to be a real, real game to look out for.
Something else we haven't discussed, and maybe it's to do with us as individuals, but I do think that EA Sports does an incredible job with the sporting franchises they have, because they sort of own that sports game space. And if you are interested in soccer/football, if you are FIFA. Interested in whatever those... Sorry, Matt?
Oh, yeah, the FIFA 2015, it's awesome.
And it's we haven't really discussed it because it's a different kind of a game, I guess. But the work that those guys have done has been outstanding. And I don't want to go through without mentioning them, because I feel like it would be doing them a disservice. But I do feel like it's a different sort of experience. It's not, you know, go on the field and pick up a automatic rifle and mow down the opposition Brazilian team.
You know, one other thing I think is worthy of, absolutely worthy of mention with regards to Destiny, I don't know what you guys think of it, but the sound design in the game I think is really amazing. And for me, it's been super immersive and I've absolutely loved it. I think probably my favorite of all of the sort of sound design cues that the guys you're sort of fighting with give off. I love the sound of the servitor, the big eyeball thing. I love that. The noises that thing makes. It is the weirdest, most bizarre sound. And so much fun. I like to just go and find a servitor and then, you know, kill it and then come back once it resets, just so I can hear it kind of make its weird noises again.
Just taunt it. Just tease it.
Yeah.
Well, as soon as we go offline, I'm going to find out what Andrew's and Matt's online names are so that they can help me level up. Clearly, I'd like to have them in my fire team and you can... hang out and low. I don't know what the expression is for you senior gamers with hanging out with a low life that's only level 15, but I'm sure you can come. I'm sure you're level 26 or something. You can come and just level me up in a few things as I try and complete stuff on Mars. But yes, until then, thank you guys so much for being with us. Now, I'm going to just, if we can, just quickly run through a little bit. We hinted at you having a site, but we didn't say what it was. So, Andrew, do you want to just explain where that is? People want to check out your comments?
My website is maturegamer.co.uk.
How mature is mature here? Like, are we mature, or are you talking like somebody that's elderly? Or are we elderly to our kids?
When we originally set the site up because we wanted... a group of people together that kind of, I guess, shared the same life experiences. So when we say mature, we kind of really mean over 25, I guess. But in this day and age of ageism, you have to be very careful. So we have a very sliding kind of age range. Okay. But it's we get quite a lot of members. It's quite a good site, and we have regular hookups and play online and help each other out, and it's all good fun.
Yeah, and I think you've got a thing there about one game we haven't talked, which is Alien Isolation. I can remember playing an original Alien game, and the first time the face hugger went on my mask, I leapt. I was like, no, I don't want to face hugger on the screen.
I was talking to some students today about Alien Isolation, and one of them has already started playing it. I guess I haven't checked it out yet, but he was talking about how there have been all these people sort of complaining that the game is too stressful.
Yeah.
And I think, but I mean, so was, you know, Alien and Aliens when I first saw it. Those were really stressful too, but like, it was awesome. But maybe it's different in a game. I don't know. I'm curious to read a little bit more about that.
Yeah, set in 2137, 15 years after the events of Alien and 72 years prior to Aliens. And that would be the sweet spot, right? We're in the good years, the James Cameron years. Okay, and Matt?
Oh, yeah, you guys can always find me on the Twitters. I'm at Matt Wallen or on my website, mattwallen.com.
So we have a new term just starting at FXPHD where you can check me out. That's where we'll be having the interview with Mark Sager. Mark Sager, by the way, has won 2 SciTech Oscars, was working at Weta. Before that, he was at Sony, did Kong and Avatar and stuff. He's now doing extraordinary work with digital faces at University of Auckland. And I mean extraordinary and way, way beyond just a kind of a simple... trick of visual effects. It's just extraordinary. But he and I bring this up because he poses some interesting stuff that we only touched on in this, and I'd like to maybe revisit it in a later one, which he has a simulation of a baby or a small girl, and it's so realistic and it's so interactive and it so responds to what's happening that audiences at the live presentation were gasping out loud. And then he said, and so I can do all sorts of things. And he took the face of the baby off and showed how the neural pathways were being simulated. And he applied various different drugs so as to simulate the effects of Parkinson's, Huntington's. These are really serious research issues, as you can imagine, from the sound of things. He put the face back on. We're looking at the baby reacting to him. And he said, I also have a button to administer an electric shock. And the audience just almost screamed. And he was like, I won't press it because people hate me. But it opened up this amazing ethical world that when you get these characters so real that the thought of applying an electric shock to this baby just literally horrified everybody, though all he was talking about doing was producing the simulated effect of a negative stimuli to a neural simulation that was hooked up to a face simulation. So there's some really interesting stuff coming down the pipe in this area. And if you'd like us to explore a bit more of games in this area, could you let us know? We obviously did this episode to see whether you guys were interested. If you feel like you want to just stay with visual effects in games, in films, that's also fine. And we'd love to hear that as well. You can, of course, follow me as Mike Seymour on Twitter. Check out the new term at FX PhD. I want to thank Andrew so much for breaking your virginity and being on the show. And Matt, as always, a great pleasure, my friend, to have you. We really appreciate your time, always. Thanks so much for being with us, guys. And if you see me online, please help me level up. Until next time, I'm Mike Seymour. See you.
If you have any questions or comments, please email us at vfx@fxguide.com.